Toby works here again.
Oh, can you imagine?
Oh, no. You don't know.
I don't know. What?
You should probably just meander back there. Take a look. See if he's back.
Dare I?
You know what? I'm going to. For old time's sake.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Weiss here with you. I know you guys are used to hearing Ethan do this whole intro thing, but my man is going through a life-changing experience, and I'll leave it at that. I'm sure he'll fill you guys in when he comes back. Today's episode of NYG Weekly is sponsored by the Mojo app. Mojo is the first app that allows you to invest in your favorite NFL players, whether it's stars like Saquon Barkley, Josh Allen, Justin Jefferson, Patrick Mahomes, or even guys that are breaking out this year like Justin Fields and Tua Tagovailoa. Mojo is live in New Jersey now. Download Mojo in the App Store today and start turning playmakers into moneymakers. You must be 21 or older to use Mojo and located in New Jersey to make trades. Have a gambling problem? Help is available at 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit mojo.com for more info. Also, wanted to point out to everybody about the contest that we're running alongside Mojo. Mojo is giving away two tickets to a Giants home game and a personalized jersey of your choice. The only thing you guys have to do is go to the pinned tweet on my Twitter profile and click the link, and you'll see the instructions, and you will download the Mojo app and leave a review on NYG Weekly. Have at it. May the best person win. Now, risers and fallers on the Mojo app this week. I am all in on Justin Fields. Justin Fields has proven me wrong. Justin Fields has made the Chicago Bears look watchable again. He is an exciting player. He's a guy that I think has rejuvenated that organization a little bit to the point where they feel comfortable to go and trade a second round pick for Chase Claypool. The Bears seem to be all in on Justin Fields. So I'm going to go on the Mojo app and I'm going to buy Justin Fields stock. Just to put it in perspective, since the beginning of the season, Justin Fields was $24-25. He's now risen to close to $28, $27.82 to be exact. He is rising. He's a guy that I am going all in on. I gave you guys the tip on Wandell Robinson. Justin Fields, he's up 6% in the Mojo app, coming off a game where he threw for 123 yards and 3 touchdowns, also ran the ball 15 times for 178 yards, had that Michael Vick type 61-yard run. So Justin Fields, download the Mojo app, buy Justin Fields stock, make yourself some money, and have at it. Meanwhile, I have my editor, sort of behind-the-scenes guy, Nick Zararis here. Nick and I, we talk sports all the time, you know, through text messages and stuff. He's definitely an entertaining dude when I do talk sports with him. So I said, hey, let's bring Nick in. And I think even when Ethan comes back, Nick will be here. Like I said, he handles a lot of our editing and behind the scenes stuff. He's also a huge Giants fan. So Nick, what's up, my man?
I'm very excited to be here. I remember listening to this podcast when I was in college, so it's kind of weird that I am doing this and on the podcast. So I'm very excited, and I'm very excited about the Giants, to be honest with you. It's been so long since I've been going into a week where it's like, I expect to win on Sunday. I think we're going to go in, and I have good feeling for the first time in forever. This is amazing. I forgot football was fun.
I think the beautiful thing is that a lot of people share that sentiment. And it's like, you talk to Giants fans, regardless what their thoughts are about this team and where it can go or the past, whatever, like they all have that same shared opinion where like, we finally feel like any game we go into, we can win. And shit, there's some games on our schedule where I'm like, we're expected to win. And that's a great, great feeling, and not a feeling that we've had for a very long time.
No, definitely not. The Giants used to be the worst part of the week because I would put them on the one TV and then I would have Red Zone with the volume on the other TV, actually paying attention to that. And just, oh, we're going to MetLife Stadium where Daniel Jones is about to turn the ball over Scott Hansen. I'm sorry.
I think the thing with me was like, you know, I have Sunday ticket. And so when October came around and, you know, November and the team was like, you know, 1-6 or 2-5 or whatever, like, I'm not putting them on the main TV. Like, listen, you'll be on the iPad and I'm just like, okay, I'm watching you because like I have no choice. Right. But now it's like, yo, everything stops, you know, like don't come downstairs into my little man cave that I've set up. Don't talk to me. Don't leave stuff laying around. Cause like, I like to throw things when things happen. I almost broke. I remember, I think it was the Packer game. I almost threw the remote, like I threw the remote and luckily I didn't hit the wall or else the remote would have been shattered. Like, it's just that level of excitement that's back with the Giants. And you and I have talked about this like off the air, and it's like, this is special, and it's special because it doesn't feel like a 1 year thing. Like, there is a culture being established here that's like, okay, like this is, they're building this thing for sustained success.
Oh, absolutely. The deadline was all you needed to know about what they are. The plan, there is a plan here for the first time, like the happy feeling we're talking about. There's a clear, coherent plan here beyond the GM trying to keep his job one more season. There is a coherent plan to build something that will work for a long time. It's not just, you don't win the Super Bowl by making the playoffs once. You win the Super Bowl by making the playoffs 6, 7, 8 years, and you get in a couple deep runs. You think about, the Giants are kind of the exception to that rule. The two Super Bowls in recent history are they made the playoffs and then the following year kind of fell off. But you need as many chances as you can to win a Super Bowl. You need 5, 6, 7, 8 playoff appearances. I mean, the Niners have gone to the playoffs every year except one since Kyle's gotten there. They haven't won a Super Bowl yet. The Cowboys have gotten there a couple times. They haven't. The Eagles might be getting to that place where maybe we can put them in that category, but this is awesome. There's no other way to describe it. This is the best. When your football team is the best, you walk with that little extra puff in your chest. You feel a lot more confident. You're not as miserable when the sun goes down at 4:30 on a Sunday. It's something magical.
You grow mustaches like yours?
I don't usually do it, but for Movember, for Men's Mental Health Awareness, I did it with a couple of my friends. So
there you go. So has nothing to do with the confidence of the Giants being 6-2.
No. I did the mustache for the summer too, because Top Gun came out, and one of my friends is like, we should do mustaches because Top Gun came out. Yeah, sure.
Okay. I got you. Yeah. I mean, the trade deadline, it was interesting because there was a lot of fans like, hey, we need to make a move. We need to make a move. But like, they tried. Like it was reported that they tried. It's just a matter of like, you can't, what was the saying of Joe Shane? You can't shop hungry, right?
Yes.
I mean, I think they understand like, look, we're 6-2. It's awesome. We're sort of expediting the rebuilding process, right? Per se, there still needs a lot more work, but like, they're still trying to lay the foundation. Like, they still need those core players. Now, the good thing is like, some of these players that they've inherited that we might have thought were only going to be here for another year or 2 years, like, they're in line for an extension. Like Julian Love, and we'll talk about the safety position and why he's now an indispensable player, but he is become a really, really good player in that role in Wink Martindale's defense. And then secondly, he's like an indispensable piece of this defense now. Like, he is, you know, Dexter Lawrence, and we talk about Dexter Lawrence and like, you know, Leonard Williams and Xavier McKinney and Adoree Jackson. Like, Julian Love is in that sort of tier where it's like, he's important. Like, he's a very valuable player for this defense. And now he's going to step into a much larger role, and we'll talk about Xavier McKinney. But like, overall, you're looking at this team and it's like, you know, that guy I thought was going to be gone in a year, he's actually a part of the future now.
That just speaks to how good coaching is, man. It's why we complained so much last year about them not being willing to try anything, because there are no untalented players in the NFL. You have to have something God-given that makes you special to get that far. To just write it off and say, well, we're not that talented, we don't want to be adventurous or bold, well, you're just going to lose. You might as well try losing in a competitive way. You think about all of these games this year, like you guys talk about all the time. Hang around till the fourth quarter and then drown them in the deep end of the pool. It's what they've been doing this year, and it speaks to how good the coaching is and how much of a difference good coaching makes.
Coaching matters.
Yeah.
All right, so that was a sort of like a happy intro. I wanted to sort of just pull you in. But now we got to get into the now. And the now is the Houston Texans and this game. Two very winnable games before a monster Thanksgiving game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But before we get into Houston, we got to talk about what happened during the bye week. Obviously, Xavier McKinney broke his hand. He said it was ATV, but it was actually like one of those Can-Am things, which is like a combination of like a motorcycle and an ATV put together, sort of like one of those things. It's much larger. He didn't give much detail, wouldn't even answer if he was driving it, but it's obvious he was driving one. Crashed it, I don't know, like reckless, not reckless. I think the bottom line is it's disappointing for him to get hurt. He is, we just talked about, indispensable piece. He is that. He's been playing really well. He's the quarterback of the defense. Where is that green dot? Now him being out, and he might not come back this season. I mean, it's not 100% that he is going to be back, but he's going to miss some serious time here in the second half of the season. My thoughts on that is like basically what Brian Daboll said. Like, it sucks for McKinney, you know, like I'm sure he didn't go to, what was it, Cabo, Mexico, right? Yeah. Like, I'm sure he didn't go there and like, with intentions matter. Like, it was he reckless? Yes, but like, it's okay to feel bad for the guy, you know, like you can have two viewpoints on it. And the other thing is like, yeah, I mean, he's kind of disappointing. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know exactly what Xavier McKinney was doing, but you know, you can make your own assumptions. Something risky was happening.
Yeah.
And maybe he wasn't doing something risky at the moment, but something happened, caused him to fall. I'm glad it's just something as broken fingers, as he said, and not something more serious. But it's disappointing. And, you know, you could talk short term. Obviously, he's out. Long term, like, is there now trust issues? Like, can we trust this guy to continue to put a C on his chest? I don't want to go that far into it, but there is definitely something that this is definitely something that needs to be addressed more for the Giants. So what are your thoughts on it? What's your feeling about it?
More than anything, I'm just glad the dude is okay. Like you were saying, football is important, but like, you know, a dude's life is a lot more important than that. Oh, yeah. And hopefully this is a lesson, a growing up kind of thing where he's still a relatively young guy, relatively new to being in the league, and just like an eye-opening type deal as opposed to the start of something bad. No one wants to worry about things like this. In theory, you hope that one bad mistake, you learn your lesson, you don't mess around with shit like that anymore. Just you're too important to the team. You're a leader on this team. You have an important role. They clearly value you because they gave you the green dot on your helmet to call the defense. Just don't, you know, apologize, move on, but get ready, get your hand healthy. And if you're back by late December for the playoffs, great. If not, have a great offseason and be ready to go first week of training camp, because this is about the long term. This year, it's nice that they're good. Next year, we're really talking about a team being good because they're going to be able to improve the roster. So it's all about attitude and stuff. Like, if he shows genuine contrition and apologizes, that's really all I need. As long as his teammates are okay with him and he addressed it with them, that's the biggest thing. It's not that it matters that he talks to the public. It's about the teammates. It's about the guys in the room, because the culture is being established right now. And this is a very clear-cut example of a time where if you have a good locker room culture, a guy will own up to a mistake, his teammates will forgive him, and that's it. There's no lingering animosity or anything. That's what it's about.
I think one of the more amazing things about the season is they have faced constant adversity, whether it's been this, whether it's been injuries, whether it's been, you know, trading a guy who you thought was going to be a big part of this offense. And they have just shown like they can overcome these things. And that's off the field. On the field, we've seen them come from behind so many times in games. But that's that, to me, that's what's made this season so much more incredible, is that before the season started, and you know, we all talked about how many games can this team win. Everyone's saying 5, 6, 7, you know, but they're saying that with the mindset of like, you know, their rookie class is going to be impactful. Well, it's been impactful, but like they've also had like half their classes on IR, you know, and then like the other half, like Thibodeau missed games. Evan Neal is in the process of missing games. Wandale Robinson missed games, right? And it's like injury after injury after injury, you know, and then there's been elements in games where it's like they played a fourth quarter with an injured, with no healthy quarterback. Like, it's just things like that that they have shown that they can overcome. Now, how it relates to Xavier McKinney is like, okay, you're facing adversity now. Your defensive captain, your quarterback on your defense is out. But it's like that, because you've faced adversity in the past, you know, different types of adversity, this is just another form of that. And like, because we've seen in the past, like, we think, okay, they can overcome this as well, even though, you know, they're going to be without a very talented player in their secondary.
Yeah, that it's the adversity keeps, and I think that, I forget who said it, somebody in the hockey community said it a couple of years ago in the context of playing in a lot of big games, but adversity is a privilege. If you are really built for these kinds of situations, adversity is just something that's going to make you better at your job.
Adversity builds culture. I'm a firm believer in that. If you can, as a group, overcome adversity, whatever it is, on the field, off the field, whatever, I just think it makes you more tighter. It sets a set of, you know, it creates an element of responsibility amongst your locker room when you can overcome certain things that, you know, people are looking at and say, man, that might derail your season, or that might derail your game, or that might derail, you know, the locker room. It's like, nah, we can overcome that. And I think this could be a blessing in disguise. It could also, you know, be a big reason why they, you know, struggle in these next, you know, couple of games. But as we move forward here, you know, and again, I've talked to you about this, but obviously there's the long-term goal, right? You don't want to jeopardize the future for the present for short-term gain. They haven't done that. It doesn't look like they're going to do that. I don't think there's any ways that they can do that. But 6-2, two winnable games, Houston and Detroit. Both two bad teams, but bad for different reasons. But they're also, like, they're sneaky teams too. Like, they might, like, I could see them winning games that many people don't think they are going to. And the Lions did that last week. Obviously, the Texans hung tough with Philadelphia last week. To me, this game is about one thing and one thing only, and that is Dameon Pierce. Look, Davis Mills, you know, like, I don't think he's a quarterback that can beat you. I think he needs a lot of things around him to be very, very good. And one of the things that he needs to be very, very good is the running game. And Dameon Pierce, you know, him, Kenneth Walker, Breece Hall before his injury, those are, you know, there were three electric backs. And the Giants faced Kenneth Walker last week, held him in check for the majority of the game, but then he obviously had that big touchdown run. It's going to be similar here. I mean, the Texans are going to rely on Dameon Pierce, and it's going to be up to the Giants' run defense, which has been shaky this season, to try and contain him, because I think that's where the game could be lost for the Giants.
Oh, no, completely agree with you. When I was looking through the team stats, these are two of the teams that throw the ball the least in the entire league. Houston runs Houston, I think, is 28th in pass attempts per game, something like that. And this is going to be a ugly football game. There's no both teams are very dinged up. Receivers on both teams, very dinged up. Even if Kenny Golladay comes back, Kenny Golladay is purely a hypothetical at this point. You have no idea what exactly his role in the offense is going to look like.
He's just a name right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the big thing for them. This could be an ugly game. These are two teams that want to run the ball, and if they can't run the ball, this could be a Big Ten West punt fest type of game where whoever makes a mistake first, or if special teams can make you a play, that's really what it's going to be. Because Davis Mills, like you said, not a particularly gifted quarterback. He's a statue back there. If you can hurry up his process, make him get rid of the ball, not a greatly accurate passer. Brandon Cooks is dinged up. Nico Collins is dinged up. Damian Pierce himself is dinged up. He's on the injury report for the week. So this is a very obviously a winnable game. I expect them to win this game, but you can't take anything for granted. This is the best football league on the planet. If you look at what Houston's two wins are, one win is where they beat the Colts, who the Colts are fraudulent, and we got to get our weekly dig in on the Colts on the show. Even if Ethan's not here, I got to take care of business. I can't wait to see Jeff Saturday. I'm very excited to see what Jeff Saturday is doing on Sunday.
Yeah, I think the Colts. that's, if Ethan was here, the Colts have some serious issues. I think the Texans 1-1 was against the Jaguars. They actually tied the Colts, but
yeah, you're right.
If you go back to that game against the Jaguars, what they did was it was a 13-6 game, and it was like their defense is not bad. Like Jerry Hughes is having a real resurgence. I sort of wish Jerry Hughes was on a contender, because I watched Justin Houston the other night, and I'm like, holy shit, Justin Houston can still play. Like Jerry Hughes is playing at that level too, but because he's in Houston, it's, you know, he's not showcased, but Jerry Hughes can cause problems. I mean, they have some talented rookies. You know, Jalen Petre, the safety, is really good player. He's a good player. And so, and obviously Derek Stingley, who's, you know, playing really good football as well for a rookie. So, you know, Lovie Smith, defensive mind. I think the big thing for the Giants is they got to get Davis Mills into third and long.
Yeah.
You get him into those third and manageables, obviously a lot of quarterbacks can find success. But when you get to third and long, which is crazy, you know, because Wink doesn't stop. Third and long, he's not going to, you know, play the sticks. He's going to keep coming after you. And I think Mills is prone to make mistakes rather than take advantage of a blitz. So I think that's going to be key here. And then you can't have special team mistakes.
No.
The last two games for the Giants, there have been a lot of self-inflicting wounds where it's like, holy shit, man, that's a terrible decision. Whether it was in Jacksonville, and I keep going back to this, but Barkley not, you know, running out of bounds twice to stop the clock. You know, the penalties that they had. In Seattle, obviously the two fumbles, but there was like other things that the Giants did wrong where it's like, man, like this is not good. One of the things about the Giants has been is they've been such a great tackling team. Seattle, they had a lot of broken tackles, a lot of missed assignments defensively. So I think those are the type of things where it's like they got to clean it up. But because they're so talent deficient, you can't expect them to like blow out any team. What you can expect is like I expect you to win, or if you're playing a superior team, it's like I believe that they can be in this game, but it's gonna be, like you said, man, it's gonna be a dirty game, and I think it's gonna come down to the fourth quarter. And what's the thing? You know, they drag you into the deep end and see if you can swim or float, and that's gonna be the test for Houston.
Houston is one of the worst teams in the entire league in third down. I wrote it down. 32, they've had 103 third downs. They've converted less than a third of them. They are not a good team on third down. To your point about Mills' ability to process, the Giants are going to be blitz happy like they've been. That's going to work for the most part against the Houston offensive line. That's Laremy Tunsil and then a bunch of guys, which, again,
Kenyon Green is okay, but he's a rookie.
Yeah. There's a clear... This is one of those games where it will come down to the turnovers, because the talent gap is not that big. The records are very different for these two teams, but the Texans have a decent amount of talent compared to what the Giants have.
One of the things about, when I ask you this, is, you know, a lot of Giant fans have magnifying glasses on this passing game where it's like they're going to be locked in watching the Giants passing game. What, like, is there a game? Is this the game where they're like, where they just look competent throwing the football? Like, or is it like, do you expect a lot of the same what we've seen the last couple of weeks, where there's like spurts where the passing attack looks to be working?
the biggest thing for the Giants about getting the passing game going is the way they've tried to manufacture offense is commendable. The fact that they have a function, a relatively functioning offense with no good wide receivers other than Wandale, who's played, I think, four games this year. He started the season late. Against Houston, you know Jerry Hughes will be coming after you. It doesn't seem like Evan Neal was playing this week. You're going to have to be able to survive. You're going to have to be able to survive if Jerry Hughes lines up the side opposite Andrew Thomas. You know whoever Derek Stingley lines up on, probably not going to be open much of this game. The Giants receivers aren't those types of guys anyway. A lot of their passing game is the manufactured stuff where they get Jones on the move, hits a receiver where he only has to evaluate half the field. They've got the underneath stuff, which if they had faster receivers would be helpful. No Bellinger is really kind of jumped out at me against Seattle because it's nothing flashy. He usually just falls down when he would catch the ball, but that's fine. You need those 5 and 6 yard incremental passes to get up and down the field. And without him, that was a real issue against Seattle. They did not have that security blanket type guy that they need to address. I mean, we don't know if Bellinger's coming back. I know I was reading today that he still got vision issues based on the eye injury he suffered. So if he doesn't come back, and that's a real dent in their passing game, because a part of what made it so good, well, not good, but workable, was the fact that they could run or pass out of formations where he was on the field because he was a good blocker.
Yeah, I think the Texans, when you watch their defense, they don't make a lot of mistakes defensively. You just have to beat them. And yeah, like Lovie Smith is, you know, defensive coach. Like he'll have his guys ready. He's been around the league. So I don't expect this game to be like Daniel Jones threw for 300 yards and a touchdown or two touchdowns, or if they throw for 250, that would be something. But it's like, I don't expect that. I think it's going to be one of those tight, you know, you said punt fest, right?
Yeah.
Like it's going to be like one of those 17-13, you know, 20-16, that type of game where it's like typically what we've seen all year. But it's a very winnable game this weekend, next week. But you're still nervous going into it because you know, like, man, how much longer can they keep winning this way? Like, at this point, you expect it to happen regardless who they're playing, like I said. But, like, can they do it for the rest of the season? Do you think that that's sustainable, or do they have to get something going? They have to find different ways to win games.
Historically speaking, trying to win only one score games isn't good, because just the law of averages over time, you're going to end up losing games. Like they've got the positive regression from 2 years of not winning any one score games under Joe Judge, it seems like, at least anecdotally. And now they're getting all of the good juju they haven't had the last couple of years, where they're getting luck, they're getting bounces, other teams are making mistakes and they're not making them. These are two teams that want to run the ball, that are going to try and shorten the game. And whichever team runs the ball better is probably going to end up winning this game.
Yeah, I do. That's a very good point. One thing I always hear is that, you know, that I've heard actually, is that, you know, Wandale Robinson is going to be a big part of this offense in the second half of the season. Like they are ready to really, he's going to sort of be the, I'm not going to say security blanket, but he's going to be the guy that they try to get going to sort of like uplift this passing game. But it's like, you have to remember, he's like a second round pick and probably the only guy that teams are scheming for defensively, where it's like that's the one guy they're circling and the sort of with their receivers, like the other everyone else, like they're just like, we're gonna man up against them. Like, you know, Darius Slayton's a good, you know, speed receiver, but I don't think he's somebody that their teams are like, yeah, you know, we gotta watch 86. I think it's actually Wandale given his skill set in that slot.
Oh, no. And the Giants are manufacturing ways to get him the ball, whether right. It's the jet motion stuff, the underneath stuff, the screens. They want to feature him. They just, like you were saying, the defenses are cued in on that. And they're going to say, all right, if that's your one guy and Saquon, okay, we can live with that. If you beat us with just two two functioning skill guys out of six on the five that are on the field at the top. Most teams will live with that because you're going to have a reasonable chance against the Giants when the Giants are in those obvious passing situations, because they don't have a guy who can get open if they need to get open. That's a real issue for them. And you really saw it against Seattle for the first time this year, where they couldn't get the running game going. That meant the passing game couldn't get going at all, and the offense just really wasn't working at all in that game because the Seahawks were ready. They knew, all right, if we stop the run, we force Jones to pass, we like our chances in that kind of game.
What's your expectation for Kenny Golladay? Do you have any?
To play some snaps. That's really it. Get on the field, run some routes, a catch, one catch maybe. You know, give him the ideal world. You get him on the field, you hit him with a 5-yard something just to get him in the offense so he feels like he's a part of the team. I know you and Ethan talked about it a couple of weeks ago where he said he'd never been on a winning team before, and that maybe you can get a light bulb on in his head to be like, oh, I could contribute here. But I don't expect much. This guy,
do you think it's effort or he's just his legs are done?
It's probably a little of both. It's hard not. I would imagine any professional athlete would be pretty discouraged by the fact he was getting dressed to not play in the game at all, just to stand on the sideline. And then that encourages the attitude thing of, well, they don't want me, so why should I put in any effort? And now you're hoping, okay, reset. You have a role if you can do your job. This team desperately, desperately needs a wide receiver who can do anything in the passing game. This is as good a chance as you're going to get, Kenny, because you're going to get cut at the end of the year. If you want another contract, you got to do something here with it, or you're just going to be a training camp invite guy next year, which sounds crazy to say about somebody the Giants made the highest paid receiver in free agency 2 years ago. But unless you're going to give team something, he's, what, 3 years removed from his last good season? It's been a while.
Yeah. You talk about light bulb. I actually have one of those light bulbs on in my head with him. And I do think, and maybe this is just wishful thinking, but I do think he scores a touchdown in one of these next two games.
Okay, I can see it.
I want to say against Detroit because it'll be the whole revenge game thing, but
Detroit's got good corners. Now that I think about it, like Okuda's been very good for them this year. That could be a little bit of a challenge. That game, like the Lions are in all of these games, but they're not very menacing in any of these games. Mm-hmm. It just kind of feels like they're a bad version of what the Giants are, where they're in every single game, but they find a way to lose as opposed to find a way to win, except last week against Green Bay.
Their wins are very climactic.
Like
when they win, you know, like there's cameras everywhere in their locker room. There's microphones all in front of Dan Campbell. Every time, you know, like they don't win much, but when they win, Dan Campbell's always mic'd up, you know, like it's like a 30 for 30 documentary, right? It's insane. Like every time they win, I feel like it's like they're throwing a parade in Detroit. I'm serious. Like it's
no, crazy. You're right. They
like Dan Campbell says things like it's like he starts crying. Like it's just some weird stuff that happens. Happened last week too when they beat Green Bay. I do think Kenny Golladay scores a touchdown in one of these next two games. I genuinely believe he will score a touchdown. Rest of the season. Hypothetically speaking, Giants win these next two games. This Thanksgiving game is like sitting in the front of my brain, and every single thing I do, I always go back to that game. When my wife says, hey, can you take the trash out? I'm like, yeah, I will, but don't forget Thanksgiving. It's just like every day I get closer to that game. It is such a huge game. And I don't want to just jump the gun, but hypothetically they win these next two games. That Thanksgiving game, you know, you hear people say this is the biggest game the Giants have played since yada yada yada. I cannot think of a bigger game for the Giants, even if they split these next two, right? Which would be disappointing in some people's eyes, but hypothetically speaking, if they're 8-2 going into that game, I cannot think of a bigger game for the Giants since the second Super Bowl than that Thanksgiving game against Dallas.
I'm trying to rattle my brain because it's been a while since the Giants have played meaningful football. I mean, It kind of has to be. I mean, and you win that game on Thanksgiving, you know, that's organization shifting type stuff right there. You
find a way. Altering game, yes.
Yeah. And they can do it. They absolutely will have the chance to do it. I'm very excited, like you said, about that. And it's been so long, man. It feels good to have the NFC East be good again. I mean, we were a punching bag for the rest of the league for so long, where an 8-win team, a 7-win team would win this division and then just lose in the wild card round every year. Now this is the best division in football.
Let me explain it to you how bad it was at one point. The Washington, at the time they were the Redskins, we'll just say Washington at the time, was in a contract dispute with Kirk Cousins.
Yes.
And it was so bad because Kirk Cousins hated Bruce Allen, who was the CEO at the time, and he probably hated Dan Snyder too. They found a way to win the division.
Yeah.
With Jay Gruden as their head coach.
That's a wild sentence. The fact that actually happened, some of the shit in this division, the Eagles just pulling their starting quarterback from a game to point shave, basically, and the NFL was like, okay, we're just going to let this happen. Well,
people talk about 2020 a lot because, Commanders were, I think they were 7-9 and they won the division. Yeah. But, 2015, if you go back and you look at how the second half of the season and how that NFC East played out, Tony Romo – I think broke his collarbone and he was out for the year. The Eagles, I think, were going through some things. And I think it was actually Chip Kelly's last season. Yes.
That sounds right.
Yeah, yeah. That was Chip Kelly's last season. So there was a lot of shit going on there. And the Giants had, Eli Manning, Tom Coughlin, Odell Beckham. And somehow the fucking, Kirk Cousin led dysfunctional Washington Redskins football, I don't give a fuck what you want to call them, won the NFC East. And I don't even think they won it in the final week. I think they won it the week before.
Yeah. Hey, this is the biggest game that isn't us rooting for the Giants to lose so we get a better draft pick. That was a real argument last year and the year before of damn, I really have to root for them to lose this week because I'm trying to get a better draft pick because that's all there was to look forward to was the chance of getting a good player as opposed to trying to win games.
Typically, by this time, I've already done 600 different mock drafts.
Yeah.
Haven't done one yet, buddy. Haven't done one. The other thing was about this game is it's tough for me to stay in the moment.
Yeah. Right?
And it's I'll be if they lose these next two, I'll be depressed going into Thanksgiving. So I'm trying to stay in the moment. Let's just beat Houston, right? Let's just get to that game with 7 wins. If they split here, I'm good. But let me just get to that game with 7 wins. Man, to me, Thanksgiving, in terms of NFL games, it's the second biggest Sunday outside of the playoffs and the Super Bowl. It's so big. And for the Giants, think about it, 8-2 going into that game.
That's
the Cowboys.
And that's going to be a great – it should be a good game too. I mean, the Cowboys defense scares the absolute shit out of me. Oh, they have the most sacks in the league. Their secondary is beatable, but the Giants don't exactly have anybody who's dynamic enough to make plays there. So it's going to be a very challenging game, and I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point next week looking ahead, but it just feels good to be optimistic for once. Yeah. Instead of worrying about the draft and, can the Giants get this corner or this pass rusher or this quarterback or complaining about Saquon's extension or trying to figure out what to do with Daniel Jones. We're just talking about actual football.
Talk about winning games.
Yeah.
We're talking about the playoffs.
Yeah.
And the thing is, things are breaking their way. Teams that they needed to lose last week lost. They have a stretch coming up where three of the four are – Houston, Detroit, Washington, and then, Dallas in between there. So, there's a legitimate chance that, they're pretty much locked into the playoffs by the first week of December. Just by looking at where things are right now, shit can change, obviously. But, they can legitimately position themselves to be pretty much locked into the playoffs by December.
The NFC being not good, definitely helping the Giants' case. I mean, I don't think the Vikings are that good. They're not bad, but I don't think they're a particularly good team. The 49ers look like a mash unit, like usual. The Rams are done, absolutely done. Green Bay looks done. I mean, the Eagles, Cowboys, I mean, you can make a real argument the Giants are like the fourth best team in the entire NFC, which is ridiculous to say out loud, but you can make an argument. I mean, I would probably disagree with you, but they're in the conversation. They'll if they're not a playoff team, it will be a disappointment because of how strong they started the season. It doesn't ultimately matter in terms of the long term, but right. To start out, come out of the gate like this, have this much of a cushion built into your schedule where really you go 500 the rest of the way, you're going to get in. And the expectation is not to go 500. It's to win these winnable games against these bad teams.
If they win four more games,
they're in.
They're locked in the playoffs.
100%.
Some might say three, but I think four, you're pretty much.
And you get Washington two more times. You should at least split with Washington. That's a reasonable goal. Detroit, Houston, that's three wins right there.
Jim Irsay's Indianapolis Colts.
Oh, I can't wait for that. I still can't believe they really made Jeff Saturday. Like, Jim Irsay was just like walking around the office and had ESPN on and was like, I could call Jeff. And my guess is he called Peyton and asked if Peyton wanted to do it. And Peyton was like, no, bro, that was a lot of work. That's my assumption.
I think, to me, on a serious note with that, and I'm not one of those people that likes to just pick up that card every time, but
yeah,
for the NFL, they probably hate it.
Yes.
Because, you know, the NFL, like, if you know, is trying to do whatever it can to get minorities into these interviews and into these positions. They're incentivizing this whole thing. I mean, they're literally trying everything outside of basically forcing a team, which they can't do legally. Like, they're literally trying everything they can, and it's just not working. And what makes this worse is, like, all the reasons you hear about why a certain type of coach doesn't get the job, Jeff Saturday got that job. Like, Jim Mercer said, I didn't care that he didn't have experience. And he's a former player. Yeah. Well, yeah, so is Reggie Wayne, your receivers coach. You know, like, it's just like it's a really tough situation for the NFL because, like, they're trying to, like, I don't know people's opinion on this is, whether they care, don't care. I'm not trying to, like, create a conversation here. But, like, I think one thing we can all agree on is the NFL is trying to give minorities opportunities. I think that's a non-controversial thing to say, right? So for this to happen and then the press conference to go the way it did, the NFL is probably sitting there like, holy shit. Like, do we really need this now? Like, this is now what we have to deal with. So look, I think I actually do like the fact that we're seeing people who, I'm not going to say skip the line, but, like, I sort of look at it like teams are just taking chances on things.
Yeah.
Let me just, Jeff Saturday, let's do it. Like, the Warriors did it with Steve Kerr. No prior coaching experience. Let's do Steve Kerr, and it worked, right? I like it. Like, even, like, a situation like Cliff Kingsbury with the Cardinals, like, I liked it. Just shoot your shot, man. Like, if it's either going to fall flat on his face, like the Steve Wilkes hire did, or, you know, you started a trend, right?
Yeah.
So I like these type of things, but there's also the other side of it. You know, that sucks. So with that said, I mean, I'm interested to see how this thing works out.
Oh, 100%. The novelty alone. It's like the game during the COVID year where the Broncos didn't have a quarterback. You watch out of morbid curiosity because you want to see what goes wrong. I mean, they don't have anybody on that staff who's ever called offensive plays before at any level. Not a high school coach, not a college coach. They literally had to hire somebody to call plays because there was nobody on that staff who could call offense.
They hired like a 30-year-old intern to call
plays. Yes. Yes. They literally hey man, I played a lot of Madden. You could have hit my line.
So I actually met when I talked to a coach one time who was actually a former head coach, but now he's a former head coach. And I was having a conversation with him and I asked him, like, what do like these, you know, these quality control coaches and all these weird, you know, types of assistant coaches that you hear, like, what do they do? And basically the answer I got, and I'll summarize it. It's like they just like take notes. They shadow offensive coordinators. They do sort of the, you know, advanced stat pulling. They might draw a play here and there. You know, they're just basically like the assistants,
yeah,
and they're interns. So to put it in perspective, the Colts just told the intern, hey, it's week, what, 10? That's a first-time head coach who has no prior coaching experience, Jeff Saturday. You're going to call plays. And, oh, yeah, it's not like we have a veteran quarterback that can help you out. Here's Sam Ehlinger that you're going to be calling plays for. Like Sam Ehlinger is now the coach.
They should have made Matt Ryan the coach. It's not like he's the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is, like, now – Like you got the head coach, you got the play caller, you got the quarterback. Sam Ehlinger is the veteran of that group. He was a sixth round pick.
He was running for his life against the Patriots last week. I think he got sacked like 9 times, 8 times, something like that. Just other. And it's going to be bad. It's really hard to call plays in the NFL. I know we all like to joke about, well, I play Madden, I play NCAA. How hard could it really be? You got to get the play in by the time it hits 15 seconds. It's hard. And you got to
have a flow of a game. Like you got to like
that. You got to decide, are we just going to run what Frank Reich was running? Do I have to scheme my entire offense from scratch? There are just – and there's so many things to have to prepare to get ready for a week on any week, a normal week when you have your staff and you're used to those guys. This is entirely from scratch. Jeff Saturday's key card just got activated this week. He walked up to the facility, walked into that office. Okay, I need somebody to call offense. They made a call upstairs. They got somebody to call offense. This team is going to be an absolute dumpster fire in the second half, and I'm very excited.
That might be good for them. Because
they need the quarterback. They need a quarterback.
They do, and I think they're finally going to be in that position, pending some
wild miracle.
Yeah, because even if Jeff Saturday can be an NFL coach, and I think that's yet to be determined, like this roster is really bad. They have issues galore. So.
Most expensive offensive line in the league, and they gave up 8 sacks last week.
Not good. And apparently, I think it was Patriot players said that the Colts knew what they were running.
Yes.
And they still couldn't stop it.
Yes. Hey, there's a reason Frank Reich got fired. I thought he was a pretty good coach. I think he's one of the better people in terms of the forward thinking stuff about going for it on fourth down, using third down to set up your play on fourth down. But it kind of got away from them there. That was a playoff team 2 years ago. They should have beat the Bills 2 years ago in the first round in the wild card game. They got the ball back with 2.5 minutes and they didn't cross midfield till there were 30 seconds left. I do not understand how it gets that away from you. I mean, that was a pretty good team 2 years ago with Phillip Rivers. Now they're a dumpster fire with a lot of really expensive players.
It's almost for so long the NFL long is considered like 3 years, but like for so long in football years, they were considered a win now roster with a quarterback away.
Yeah.
Now it's sort of like coming to a fold where it's like, they're no longer a win now roster. They're a roster that probably needs to be torn down and rebuilt. And they're going to have an opportunity to be amongst those 5, 6 teams that are going to be in position to take a quarterback. So it's a blessing in disguise for Colts fans because this is what they needed. But it's just unfortunate that over the next 8-9 weeks, the conversation is going to be about Jeff Saturday and what's going to happen.
It's very interesting how aggressively involved Jim Irsay has gotten with them over the last couple of years, where last year they lost that game to the Colts. And as they were getting on the plane, he was telling people, we're not bringing Carson back. We can't do this again. And he's the reason they went to Sam Ehlinger over Matt Ryan and they fired Frank Reich.
And they fired the offensive coordinator. Like they it was like Jimmer to me, everything fell apart when the Carson Wentz era fell apart.
Yes.
I do believe Frank Wright was vouching for Carson Wentz, basically pounded the table. This is my guy. This is my guy. Go get him. Go get him. Go get him. And Irsay signed off on it, if you want to say.
Yeah.
And that whole thing just fell flat on its face. And it wasn't just they didn't make the playoffs and the way they didn't make the playoffs. Like there was shit that happened in the locker room, obviously, that it just tore that team apart. And I think that's when Jim Irsay stepped in. And who decided to go get Matt Ryan, I don't know. But I think from that moment, you saw Jim Irsay become the main signal caller for that organization. Whereas before, he maybe let Chris Ballard and Frank Wright make the decisions. But after the Wentz debacle, he said, I am, you know, micromanaging, or I'm going to make some sort of decisions that I will let you guys make in the past. And we saw it over the last 3-4 weeks.
I'm very glad John Mara has kind of learned his lesson to some degree about staying out of it and letting the football people make decisions. I'm very glad so far we haven't had the embarrassing. I really like the direction of our team after they win one game when they're like 1-6 article in the New York Post, like last year, where yeah. they won the Carolina game. And it was like, ooh, they beat Matt Rhule. Big deal.
I think the most important thing is you have to get a head coach and a GM that are philosophically aligned.
100%.
And I really hope Irsay, like Chris Ballard might be a good GM, might be a great, very good talent evaluator, might know how to maneuver around the draft. He's done in the past. But it just seems like wholesale changes need to come to Indianapolis. Yeah. And I can't take the glass half full approach.
That'll be the very stupid game the Giants lose for whatever reason. They'll lose to Indianapolis with Sam Ehlinger throwing the ball like 6 times the entire game somehow. Jonathan Taylor will have 290 yards, the one good game he has all year, just because the Giants have had too much good luck to start the year.
I think we'll see the Colts pack it in.
Cancun?
Yeah. I think that's going to happen over the course of the next 3-4 weeks before that game. Yeah, I think you'll start to see some of their wealthy veterans –
business decisions.
Oh yeah. We're shutting Darius Leonard down. He's got a hamstring thing. You know, DeForest Buckner's got a knee. I think you'll start to see stuff like that, and that's when Jim Irsay can say he's not tanking. But come on, man. Listen, Nick, it's been fun.
Always.
You are now like, and we'll share this. Like, you're gonna be a part of the podcast. Like, you're our guy. Editor Nick is what I call him. He's got a mustache. He got an NFL cap on. You're like Rob Lowe a little bit.
I got this hat because of the Rob Lowe thing. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. How do you find one of those hats? The NFL store sells them. The NFL
really?
Shop sells them.
You can just get a regular NFL hat? Wow.
Yeah. Hey, man, the Giants are very bad. I was not buying Giants gear for quite a while. I bought an NFL logo hat, and I sit down on the couch to watch Red Zone. I pull the NFL logo hat on, and I'm protecting the shield like Roger Goodell would want me to.
So here's the thing about gear, right? I got so I started buying gear this year too. Sweatshirts, long sleeve shirts, short sleeve. Like I was going all out. I haven't bought Giants gear in a long time. So
I bought was an Odell jersey. There's a reason I stopped buying them.
Yeah, I don't remember what was the last thing I bought, but it's been a while up until this year. So I bought a lot of things. And so I was buying like multiple sizes because, you know, Nike is a little weird with their fitting. And I was like, oh, I'll just buy it. And when the fits, I'll keep. The one that doesn't fit, I'll just send it back or whatever one fits better. I didn't know that Fanatics charges refund fee.
Yeah, it's annoying. Fanatics stinks.
And I hate to be a cheapskate, but dude, these refund fees add up when you're ordering like 20 things. So I was like, I'm just going to keep some of these things, just give it away to a friend or something. But yeah, I'm back, dude. I'm all the way in on this.
I can't wait to get my feelings hurt. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the best. Like, you have to get your feelings hurt at some point. That's a part of it. Part of it. And then there's times where like you can't sleep because you're like so focused in. That's how I am with this Thanksgiving thing. Dead serious.
I was talking about it last night with my friend who I went to the Devils game with about it. We're both big Giants. We were talking about maybe we'll go to the game Sunday against Houston, and we're both like, oh, we still got to play Dallas though. We both said it at the exact same time. We still got to play Dallas though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be monumental.
Yep.
Well, all right, Nick. That was fun. Always. First of many. I think you'll be around. Follow him. Nick, you want to plug your @?
Oh, yeah, sure. Nick Zararis, Zararis. I never log off. I never stop tweeting. I really need to get better hobbies, dude.
You're always around, man. Anytime I need you, you're there. Doesn't matter the time or day. Guys, give Nick a follow. Like and subscribe on the podcast. That's our episode. We think Houston, we're going with the Giants on Sunday. 7-2, yes, right? Yes, 7-2. You know, the 7-2, 6-3 thing, it's like 7-2 sounds a lot better than 6-3.
Yes,
you know, like that's one of those records, like 2-2 and 3-1, you know, and like 1-2 and 0-3. They always say this sounds so much better. 7-2, 6-3 is a big difference. It just sounds better when you're 7-2.
Let's go, Giants. Come on. Win a game you're supposed to win. Take care of business. This is a winnable game. Let's get it done.
Kenny Galladay touchdown.
I'll go throw $5 on that on one of the – if I can find a line on that, I'll throw $5 on that out of morbid curiosity.
There you go. Thanks, guys. We'll talk again next week.
See you guys.